Welcome back to Wake Up with Nubian Tigers Talk, a podcast brought to you by a group of Black Princetonians where we talk about issues impacting our Black and Brown communities. My name is Michelle Jacobs, and I'm here with my co-host, Ray Smalls. So, Ray, we have to welcome ourselves back because we had an unexpected and unintended hiatus in the podcast.
I know. And unfortunately, Michelle, a few things happened that, I personally never thought it was going to happen, but you kept telling me, Raymond, be aware, be ready, and I never listened.
Yep. So here we are, and everybody's looking around wondering what to do now that the election results were not what they hoped or expected.
And we're all depressed, Michelle.
Yeah, but you know what, Ray? There's no reason to be depressed because racism has always existed in our country, and the efforts to remove us and eliminate us have been consistent. So what we want to do this season is to help people look forward, to find other avenues where they can participate and feel like they are contributing to the survival of our people and to themselves.
Beautiful.
So we're going to have some guests this season that are talking about alternative ways of existing that perhaps we haven't thought about before, and that might inspire us to think of, in a new way.
Okay.
So our first guest is Yanne Endigo, who is a writer, singer, and the mother of a young woman who is also a creator. She's been developing a project called Ubuntu Freedom for well over a decade. As the visionary for the project, she's been working with teams of organizers as partners and advisors to develop a collection of freedom resources. These resources will support and network communities and individuals' ability to embody the principles of freedom inspired by Ubuntu, which means I am because you are. While building these resources, she brought Ubuntu Freedom into the world by supporting and developing projects that embody the principles, including the Care Space Project, Curve Fest, Homegrown Maroons, and the annual Maroon Legacy Prisoners Families Brunch. She is also a member of the Black Alliance for Peace. Welcome to the show, Yanne.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Okay, there's so much to talk about with you, and we only have this little short time, so I'm going to jump right into it. And first, why don't you give our listeners the basic overview of what Ubuntu Freedom is?
Sure. So Ubuntu Freedom is a freedom project. It's a freedom build initiative. And so the idea with Ubuntu Freedom was to build infrastructure that supports and connects different people, organizations, entities, groups that are aligned with our vision for what we actually know that the world could be, the free, liberated world that we are striving towards, for them to be able to be connected with each other, learn together, grow together, be empowered by each other. And there's a few legs that come off of that project that all work together in order to support that goal. But it's a service, it's an offering to the larger movement community in order to empower our work towards liberation.
Okay, so in your materials that you shared with us, you indicated that you've worked with a few international groups to get the vision for Ubuntu and the principles together. So before we jump into the principles, I was wondering if you could speak to what inspired you to work with the international group and how that process worked. Was it difficult, or, you know, what was driving that process?
Sure. So project has a global vision and a global lens. And my activation was a reflection. It started when I saw, like back in the 70s, when we would see those images of children starving in Ethiopia. There was like that very particular image that was being presented at that time. And that suffering really activated me. And so from the very beginning, and then I began to see how that was also happening in our local communities and even in my family. And so I've always had like a global as well as local kind of, you know, vision for the transformation that I was hoping to see and be and contribute to and felt a responsibility towards. So it's always been a global vision for Ubuntu Freedom. And I already know the way that a lot of times people organize, they think that, oh, I have a solution and I'll impose it on people I've never met, people I've never seen, people whose culture I don't know. And that is definitely not how we wanted to approach things. So we wanted to have the voice, the insights, the wisdom, the power of people in different places that could help represent a more global vision and actually make it a more global, collectively created vision. I had begun traveling around the world. And as I was going into different places, I'm meeting different people who had an aligned vision. I would stay connected with them and communicate with them. And so when it came time to doing the work of bringing the community together in order to develop these principles, I reached out to people and asked them to be involved in the process. And most of the people were local in the US, but there were people who were either in other places or from other places, like in India, Palestine, Suriname. And so we just really wanted to understand how to move the vision forward. And we worked with the principles that you mentioned. That was a big project that we worked on for over a year. We spent like 2 to 3 times a week for every week for 13 months, just refining these principles in order to get them to a place that really represented what we thought of as the vision we shared. So we did not develop these principles to be like, oh, we know what everybody needs to have and we're going to tell you. That wasn't the idea. The idea is that we realize that there is a vision that so many of us actually already share. And so let's do the work to represent that in a way that makes it more tangible and makes it easier for us to know and be able to say, like, we can both point to this, we both agree with this, and so we know we're on the same page and we can build from there. And we also can be accountable to that same page, as opposed to some of the confusion that I've seen, I've been a part of groups that have had where they don't have a clear vision. And so people are constantly conflicting because you've got conflicting politics, conflicting ideals, conflicting vision, conflicting principles. So we recognize the importance of that not being a thing with if we're going to build towards this future that we wanted. And so we really took the development of the principles really seriously.
So we're interested in how you came up with the 12 different principles just in general. And then can you point to either one or two of them that have the most impact for you? And the number 12 is interesting for me because I've been in a 12-step program for many, many decades. Yeah. And I'm wondering whether there was some inspiration from those that got you and your group to come up with the number 12 in terms of your Ubuntu vision principles.
Yeah, so we didn't actually strive explicitly for 12 principles. And originally, the first draft, there were 8. But as we were continuing to work, we would realize this is missing. You know, that was why it was so important to have like this collective vision, you know, this collective wisdom in place. So we would realize, oh, we haven't said anything about water. You know, water is so important. We haven't said anything about spirit. We didn't say anything about, you know, our ecosystem in this way. And so there were some initial principles that I drafted and offered to the group. Those principles were titled very differently than what the end result is. They had the little descriptions, but they didn't have system ideas. They didn't have, you know, examples. And all of those are things that people were like, we need to have this. We need to add this. We need to work on this. And then one of the things that was really important to us was to do the work as much as we can of sitting inside of the vision that we want and speaking from that place versus speaking from now about where we want to get to. So we wanted to like have the language aspire to represent what we are us as if we're already in the space of that vision being manifested. And in that way, we think of it almost like a spell that when you read it, hopefully it invites your mind to open, expand, to connect with the higher consciousness in order to be able to really tap into how do we manifest this vision? How do we embody this vision today? But the call is for people to do the work to embody the vision in the now. The principle, one of the main principles that really, the first principle really, I think is really key for me, food is freedom, because getting those basic nutritional needs met And so when food is locked away from you, whatever you have to do in order to be able to get food is what you end up doing. So when food is locked away from you, you are enslaved to whomever it is that gives you access to that food. So it's a very basic, and you know, and particularly when we know that like nobody pays money to the earth for the food to be produced, but somehow we have to pay food to pay money to people in order to be able to receive what the earth is providing to us at no at none of those fake currency costs. And so that's one that I think really is like probably the one that resonates with me the most. And I think that, you know, the principle spirit guides our liberation is another that I think is really key to me. You know, I recognize when you look historically, like, I always look at that example of Haiti and how Haiti, like the people in Haiti were able to overcome, and it's ironic I'm talking about that while I'm here on this land, but they were able to overcome and defeat the most feared navy in the world at that time. And they did that as people who had been enslaved, who didn't have resources, who didn't have certain that, you know, that level of weaponry, because they tapped into spirit. And so it was really important for the oppressive powers to separate us from the power that comes from us being connected to spirit, being connected to nature on another level, like being able to tap into the consciousness in the spirit that nature has, and work with nature. That is another piece on the other side of that, that I think is ironically the bookmark principles, the first and the 12th, are two of them that I think really stand out to me, you know, but you know, there's so many we could go over if if we had that time, because I really do love, you know, all of the principles.
As you scroll down the list, and I should just say for our listeners that we're going to post all 12 of the principles on the website so that people can see them in full. And it's really just a question of time while we're not going through each one. But as I look through each one, I notice all the sort of ills that we're experiencing in our society today are addressed in a principle. Like number two is housing is sacred space. Okay. Yes, this is an issue that we're all juggling with today, and it's just going to get worse, and at least here in the United States.
Some of us aren't juggling at all.
Yeah, you know, exactly. But, you know, Yane, when I contacted you before, one of the things I mentioned to you was that I'm an abolitionist. So, you know, one of the ideas that we're always being confronted with by people who don't know what abolition is how will our communities be safe without the police, right? And I have been trying to explain to them how communities can make themselves safe without the police. So you have a principle that addresses that, and not necessarily the police, but, you know, empowering communities to be safe. So maybe you could speak to that a little bit.
Sure. I also am an abolitionist. And I've actually done a good amount of work around that subject as well. And in Philadelphia, we had the Black Philly Radical Collective that was formulated in 2020 during the rebellion. And we had put together 13 demands. And one of those demands was for the defunding to police through to their abolition. So we had like a course of like a 5-year plan of like taking, decreasing the funds until, and reiterating, pushing those funds over, shifting those funds to programs that actually help communities and make them safe. And so, you know, our understanding is the police only have existed for a short amount of time in the history of humanity. And somehow communities were able to be safe and function safely without this institution that's called police. So that's one thing that, you know, we abolitionists recognize, and also the history of police here and how they began, how they started as protectors of property for wealthy people who were oppressing the people around them and who didn't want those people who were being oppressed to come and, you know, to rebel against them and those oppressive and hoarding activities that they were doing. So they hired their private security, which then they eventually said, why should we pay for that? Let's let the taxpayers pay for that as well and tell them that we're doing it for them, even though to this day, they're only doing it for themselves. You know, another thing that a lot of people just don't realize and recognize, the amount of violence that so much of the violence that we experience in our communities is facilitated through police. you know, whether it's because they help with drug distribution, whether it's because they help with gun distribution. I was a part of the, there was a encampment in 2020 on the Parkway in Philadelphia. And one of the people who, and the, a lot of the people who were in that encampment were unhoused, but I camped with them for some portion of that. And one of the people who was there talked about how he had had his illegal gun, and that illegal gun was confiscated at an arrest. And that later on, he ended up getting that gun back, that very same gun on the street, because the police, they put them guns back on the street. So they're facilitating the violence in addition to the violence that they are perpetuating. If we as a community make sure that everyone in the community has their needs met, if everybody in the community has food, if everybody in the community has safe housing, if everybody's health is taken care of, if everybody's right to be themselves, their individual autonomy, their individual personal sovereignty is supported, respected, and developed and nurtured, then you're not going to have people who are attacking each other. You're going to have people who are protecting each other. You're going to have people who are supporting each other and nurturing each other. And you won't need these kinds of safety kinds of mechanisms. The only safety mechanisms that we really need in our community, and my belief, in that once and as we become healthier and healthier, are mechanisms that protect us from the larger institutions that don't want us to be safe, don't want us to be autonomous, don't want us to have sovereignty and self-determination, and therefore would come in and attack us. And so one of the things that that principle is talking about is the importance of us knowing how to defend ourselves against attacks that may happen outwardly is a core part of being safe, as well as knowing how to engage each other in ways that help us to not hurt, harm, and attack each other, but to find solutions to disputes and difficult moments between us, and to build our skills up individually and as a collective community to that end.
That's a great answer.
Yane, I've got a question about Ubuntu Vision. And, you know, we are so westernized. I was talking with Michelle earlier, and I was like, how do we basically reprogram everybody, you know, to understand what it is that you're saying and how to envision it and how to apply it? Because, you've got so many things that are going against you. You know, back when Michelle and I were growing up in the 60s and 70s, you know, the civil rights movement was a movement that was, you know, through the church for the most part, right? Well, how do people in the church look at, or have you, you know, brought your principles and your vision to churches throughout our communities around this country? And what was the feedback that you got from them?
Yeah, that's a really awesome question, particularly because of some of the exciting things that we have going on. The principles have been introduced to some churches and to some spiritual communities. They've been introduced to churches, synagogues, mosques, to the Quaker community. And we're actually, so one of the projects for Ubuntu Freedom has three main kind of like branches. So one of them is the development of a virtual community. So there's an app that's in development right now called YouFree. One of them is the immersion, like creating immersion experiences where people will be able to collectively embody the principles and be someplace where that's constantly what's supposed to be happening, whatever you're doing, like not part-time, not just this one principle. All the principles are being embodied by the collective in their different ways all the time. And the third is where if you are like in your city and everybody there is not necessarily a part of this community, but there are people who are, you can come together in order to do that same work of embodying the principles and working to embody them in the lives of community. And so that leg is being developed through a concept called the Church of the Revolution. The Church of the Revolution takes all of the different components of a church environment. So you have your service. You have your church service, right? And so we would have a service that would have, you know, some of those different elements. You'd have some, you know, things that some art that can lift you, elevate you, open you. You'd have conversation that would, you know, introduce you to new concepts. You have a congregation of people who are coming together, some of whom are members of the movement community, and hopefully many who are not, but can be funneled into the movement community. The movement community members or be in their different organizations would make up the ministries that will work together in order to strategize and be able to work more collectively, more strategically towards how I move us towards this vision without conflicting with what you're doing, but complementing what you're doing as you move us towards this vision. And, you know, all these different components. And so I presented this concept to a collective of reparations oriented institutions. And they are committed to supporting our effort to secure a building in order to really represent this model, which we really support being duplicated in other communities. And the expectation is to be true to the vision, true to the principles, and take it and run with it. We're not owning things, right? The Spirit brought these things to us to give to the larger collective community, and that's how abundance works. And so there's actually an institution, a Quaker institution, who is giving us space in order to be able to begin to have our sessions, our services. And so our first service will actually be in May in Philadelphia, May 18th at Green Street Friends. There has been a receptiveness to the principles. There's not a desire to conflict with people and what it is that they are doing that is elevating themselves and healing them in their own kind of walk towards spirit. And we know there are many different paths that are out here for people to be able to move. It's just an opportunity for us to help people to embody those things even more and figure out how to shift from this kind of ideological place that a lot of times even religious institutions are, how to shift that into reality, into a practical reality, and particularly working with people who may or may not be a member of your church or may or may not be a believer of the same faith that you have, but are still a part of your community.
That's great. And we'll if you give us information as you get it about the May 18th date, we'll make sure to get that information out. Well, I love that you gave that example, though, because one of the issues that Ray and I were talking about is that Black people are good on, we have fabulous ideas. We are very creative people, but we're not always good on execution. So we can't always get our ideas from.
My teachers used to tell me that in school. Your follow through is poor, Raymond.
Yeah, the follow through is not always concrete. But I noticed in your the papers that you sent us, you tried to give examples of where different values that the principles reflected had actually been put in place or been tried. And that made me think about a website called A Million Experiments, which is the idea that when you come up with a new idea, if we're going to build a new society, a new way of living with each other in peace, you have to try a million things, right? They're not all going to work, but the things that work, when you connect them with other people who also have things that work, it helps to create the structure for the new society. So is there, I know I didn't send you this question, but is there anything off your head that you can think of that sort of shows how you all are communicating amongst each other, even the international group, about even if there's small things that work?
Well, I think that The thing that I think is the biggest piece is people coming together. For example, in Vermont, there's a community of farmers, and that community of farmers includes people from Puerto Rico, from Nicaragua. That the farming is ironic because we talk about food as freedom, and farmers is one of the places where I see a lot of that kind of interconnectedness happening. I've been in many different situations. For instance, I remember going to Co-op Jackson to support, they have some of their community farms. And I went to Co-op Jackson to support their farming kind of like prep work for the next season. And I was there with people from all around the country, but also there were multiple people from multiple different farms from Puerto Rico, that were there. You know, I've connected with similar people in Colombia. I'm connecting with you know, agriculturalists and people here in Dominican Republic, where I am now. That kind of like travel to connect reality is one of the ways that I'm seeing this happen, because it's all about people coming together, sharing best practices, sharing what they've learned, sharing things that, you know, were not, like, that wasn't a great way to do this, you know, so learn from my mistakes. And I think, and that's really what the projects, and especially, I mean, the Church of the Revolution seeks to do that at the local level, but even more so, the Seed and Harvest League and the You Free, which Seed and Harvest, again, is the immersion, and You Free is the app. And so what the app will do is it will provide a way for you, wherever in the world you are, to be able to say, hey, I tried this thing and it worked really well. And I've been documenting it and I'm putting it up here. And this is one of the ways that I'm working to embody the principles. Or alternatively, you know, this didn't work so well. Learn from my mistakes. And, you know, if you're in this kind of a climate, don't try this or whatever. But also to connect. And the app is going to be doing, it's going to do a lot of things. And it'll start, the first launch of the app will just be about those information feeds and people just sharing information. And that information will be categorized by the principle that their works, you know, relates to. So that's one of the ways that is intended to work. But then there's also the Seed and Harvest, which is where people will be able to come together from different places, wherever they're from. And based on the work, which principle they work under, there'll be cohorts that they can work. You know, maybe there's 3 to 5 people who are under one particular principle, but they all come together and we will be coming together as in camping retreats at locations where we can do some sort of building. And some people are learning how to build, some people are using and guiding that building and transforming the place that we are at. So that when we leave, we've actually built community, we've actually done some work to embody what we're doing. People are learning these skills that we need in order to build the new world, and taking those skills back as well as those relationships back to where they came from. And the whole goal of Ubuntu Freedom is only to be like an amplifier, to be like fuel on a fire that's already burning around the world, where people are already connecting, people are already learning and teaching and building and growing and being able to just make that more connected, more empowered, that whole like 5 fingers apart or a fist all together, you know, bringing the work that people are doing into a local space so that there's more power behind it, so that our voices are able to come together and amplify each other, and that we can work together, we can make demands together, and we can demand more of each other and of ourselves, because we're building something that is different, and we can stop looking to this thing that does not want to take care of us, that only wants to use us, that wants to extract from our bodies and our labor and our creativity and our ingenuity in the same way that it extracts from our land that we have the relationships with. We don't need to look to that for our solutions. And so this is here to help us to stop doing that and to really, really immerse in looking at each other.
So, Yane, how do you envision your vision being funded? In other words, people who are trying to become involved with your thought process, your ideas or what have you, they would probably ask you, okay, well, how do you guys, you know, fund yourselves? Where is your economic power originating from?
Yeah. So it's interesting because I was blessed to be able to like funnel the vision of Ubuntu Freedom. There's the influence. And I mean, there are other people who have received similar vision. Like, this is a download that came down to multiple people. And I don't think I'm the only one that got it. And I don't take credit for it either. Like, I know of other projects that are similarly motivated, similarly inspired. And I think each person who receives it within the context and the framework of themselves, their life, their knowledge, their experience, and how that influences them. And I've lived a very different kind of life. And I don't work a job. I don't have, any kind of like independent wealth. But like right now I'm living in Dominican Republic for 4 months. When I leave here, I'm going to Thailand for a month. I move around the world. I've been to Nicaragua, Colombia, Costa Rica, Nigeria. And I can't explain how that works, really. except that I have done the work to align with my purpose and the universe makes everything else fall in place. And that's exactly the way that Ubuntu Freedom is working. So people do make contributions and we have gotten some small grants and things, and we will be looking into that, but we're not depending on that. And when the app is built, the app will provide a way for some resources to be able to come in for people, but there will be no barriers. There will be no differences. If you pay money, you don't get a blue check versus somebody else who didn't pay money or anything like that. Everyone will be equal, but we will be sowing into our collective project to the degree and the ability that we're able to. And that will also be something that people will be able to do through the Church of the Revolution. So people will be able to tithe just like people would be able to do in churches and be able to make contributions that way. So we'll have infrastructure. We think that the proof will be in the pudding. So as we accomplish more and more for people, I personally, and I'm not the only person that's doing this project, working on this project, but I personally have a very solid body of work for the organizing that I do and have been doing over years, over a long period of time. And that body of work is what entrusts people already to support what it is that we're building. And as the Ubuntu Freedom Project has a larger and larger body of work and more people are being impacted, more and more people will also want to support the ability for that to expand as well. And so it's all spiritual. You know, again, spirit guides our liberation. And so as we grow, I honestly just don't even worry about where the money's coming from, because I'm only doing what I'm told. And so I let the rest of it be figured out. The spirit told me I was camping on the side of a river in the jungle in Costa Rica when I was pushing so hard to try and get all these things going. And spirit told me, calm down. I got this, and constantly sends me images of me on a river, like a rapping, roaring river. And like when I try to move it, it's like when you put your oars in the water, you're actually slowing it down. Take your oars out of the water, put them in the boat, sit back and just do what you're told. And that's what I'm doing. So I know that can seem kind of odd in this very capitalist kind of society. But I think part of what the purpose of Ubuntu Freedom and part of what my purpose is here is to show just really what abundance really looks like. People are always talking about the law of attraction and manifestation, but they also want it to make sense inside of a capitalist framework. And it doesn't function in a capitalist framework. Manifestation, the law of attraction, those are universal laws. And then capitalism is something that's man-made and made up. Mm-hmm. And so you can eliminate that capitalist framework and just stick within the laws of the universe, and everything else is going to just magically, literally, legitimately, magically figure itself out, because the universe can do way more with everything than I can do on my own.
Michelle, I've been talking to the wrong spirits, for sure.
Yeah. As I might have suggested on occasion. But, you know, the problem, right, Yane, is that I totally agree with you. But the problem is, you know, most Americans, particularly Black Americans who have achieved some level of either professional or financial comfort, that's very frightening. That's a very frightening idea that there's no guaranteed money attached to it. But it's also real. I mean, there's a wonderful book called The Revolution Will Not Be Funded. It's a collective of essays on how if you really want to create a different structure, you can't rely on capitalist funding in order to get it. It's not going to happen. It's not in their best interest. Mm-hmm. But I do want to appreciate your comments and also recognize that that makes people nervous, that the idea. Yeah.
It does. And, you know, so it's interesting because I do coaching. I coach people. And that's one of the things that I coach them around is like, you know, just understanding like what flow is and, you know, and how we can move abundance, how abundance moves through flow and through our like not being afraid. A lot of people, again, they believe in these ideas of abundance, but they're very fear-based. They're very scarcity-based in their operations. And then they see the result of that, which is scarcity coming and showing up in its life. And then that reinforces for them, like, maybe this abundance thing doesn't work unless this. And, you know, and they expect it to look very capitalistically as well. And, you know, and so I do coaching in order to represent that possible shift. The other thing is that, like, the app is being built. Like, the app is going to be here in a matter of a few months. Like, it's already paid for, you know, so it's going to already exist. And
can I jump in right there? Because, you know, we're, as I told you before, we never have enough time.
Right.
But I think that the app thing is a good thing to sort of round out on, because mm-hmm. as we all know from the recent events that have happened in the United States with internet communication over the past 2 years, we don't have a secure way to communicate with each other. So we need the app. We need the app so that we can communicate with each other securely and comfortably, and not be interrupted with what we're trying to accomplish. So if you guys need help or, you know, whatever with that, getting that out, you know, please share that with us and we'll try to see if people can help out. But
yeah, for sure.
The thing that we always wrap on is we ask our guests, if you had to pick, if there was just one thing you wanted the listeners to walk away with from what you've said today, what would that be?
I would say that abundance is based on faith, and that fear does not support abundance, that hoarding and holding on or piling up, it does not support abundance. It's a block and a barrier to abundance. And so I like the analogy of the heart. The heart, blood flows in and blood flows out. And if the heart decides, I want to hold the blood right here, it can't keep bringing blood in. And the whole body that it's a part of begins to suffer and will die because of that holding on and trying to pile up will cause a swollen heart. It functions like blood clots. So we really need to allow, like, we need to be able to let go, and letting go is a way that you communicate to the universe, that you trust the universe to actually keep feeding in. And so letting go and not holding on, not stockpiling and not hoarding is an important component of demonstrating faith, which allows for flow, which feeds the whole collective, which is where abundance shows up. So that's what I would leave. That's how I would leave your audience with that concept.
Okay, you've been listening to Yane Indigo, and I gotta say, this is a very different podcast from what we usually have, but yeah, I want our absolutely. Listeners this season to think about alternative ways of living so that we are not trapped in this nightmare that is happening in our own country. So I want to thank you so very much for being willing to come on and talk to us for a few minutes. And we need the information on the Church of the Revolution event, mm-hmm. Whatever other dates you have that you want us to put out for you.
And the unveiling of the app.
Yeah, yeah, and the app, and if you want a donation, sometimes we have readers who listeners who can actually
correct.
Do a donation.
Right.
So yeah. Make sure we have on.
I'll send all of that as well, and all my stuff is at Yane Indigo. So that's like my Instagram, my YouTube, my Facebook, my X, and all my cash things as well. It's paypal.me/YaneIndigo. It's Yane Indigo at Cash App, the $ Yane Indigo, the Venmo at Yane Indigo. So everything with me has, luckily I have a uniquely written name, a unique name, uniquely spelled. So everything is able to just be, you know, that. So, you know, mm-hmm. people can find me. They can go to my YaneIndigo.com and find me and figure out how to support what I'm doing. And I know we're out of time, but I do want to just offer my motto, which is all things come together for my good because I am called according to my purpose. And I think I wanted to offer that because when you were talking about what the days and what the time is like right now, all of everything that's happening, even now, even how rough it is and how scary it is that's happening here, is to benefit us and move us forward towards a more purposed place. And I believe that. And so that's what my motto is. And I don't ever have to be sad or upset when things don't go my way, because I know that they're always going my way because I'm aligned according to my purpose.
Let's hope.
Absolutely. Great words to end on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wow. So I know our listeners probably weren't prepared for that.
Not at all.
You know, again, and at this critical time in our histories, we need to be thinking outside of the box. Mm-hmm. And so Yane and the people of the Ubuntu Project are thinking outside of the box. Mm-hmm. And even if we don't agree with everything they say, it's enough to get us to start thinking, what alternative ways of existing can we participate in? So,
I have to tell you, like, even when I was looking at her site, I kind of got really inspired, and it took me back to, you know, the 70s and a lot of the individual projects that were going on back in the 70s, and the idea of, you know, the Black Panthers, the Young Lords, and you know, Black liberation or what have you. And she was really inspiring, and hopefully, you know, our listeners are re-energized and still beginning to think on a different level, because we have to reorient ourselves right now. We really do. Exactly. We have to reprogram ourselves.
Exactly. And we have to reprogram ourselves to get back to the idea of survival. Mm-hmm. Not just surviving, but also thriving. So hopefully this is the beginning of an interesting season. And I'm really looking forward to the other guests who add on to that.
Me too.
If you like what you heard today, follow us on our website, www.nubiantigerspodcast.com, where you can get additional information about the show. And don't forget to check out our resource pages while you're on the site. You can find our podcast on YouTube on the Nubian Tigers Podcast channel. And if you have a favorite podcast app, we may still be on it. Look for Nubian Tigers Talk. Looking forward to sharing some knowledge with you next time.
Wake up, wake up, wake up.